Hi, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. All right, so I want to welcome the star of the show, Michelle, my wife and mama of baby Isabella. So let's have you take us through your amazing pregnancy journey. I will tell you, you are such a strong woman. I feel like I should apologize to my mother that I haven't thanked her for every day of my life for what she went through to give birth. I mean, gentlemen, if your wife has ever given birth, you know what I'm talking about. Ladies, thank you for giving birth. Absolutely amazing. So tell us about Isabella and everything you love about her and your favorite things.
Yeah. So our daughter was born on March 3rd and she was 8 pounds, 5 ounces. And that's a good sized baby. Like that's a good sized baby. I was a big baby too. I was a 9'3"er, a 9 pounds, 3 ounces.
Yeah.
3 ounces. And what were you? What did you weigh?
I don't know, but I'm still a big baby to this day.
Yeah, so. I think you were in the sevens. I think you're kind of like a normal range. Anyways, what do I love about our daughter? What don't I love? Her screaming. No, I love everything about her. I think she's the most adorable baby. And she looks just like me as I was a baby. Like we had the same forehead wrinkles and we had the
same beautiful mouth.
Same. Yeah, she's got my lips. Yeah. And she's just the happiest little girl. She's been a complete joy. And she's
a good sleeper like mom too.
She's a good sleeper like me. Yeah. She's just started smiling too. So I'd have to say my favorite part is her smiling. What would you say your favorite part is?
I love her little cheeks. I can't get enough of kissing her little cheeks and her forehead. So she is amazing. And I truly believe she is a happy baby. And yeah. I'm very happy about that. And yeah, she's a little fussy for a couple hours around dinner time, but, other than that, you know, it's just been amazing. So yeah. Your journey to motherhood, you know, we fast forward through, we started off in Vancouver and we moved down to Mexico and then you went on this, pretty tough journey throughout, you know, with ups and downs throughout the final trimester, but just for people listening, you know, we did move from Canada, then we went to California, then we went to Cancun, keep it all in the C's department.
I just realized that now. It's all C's, triple C's.
Yeah. And Craig. How did you manage the stress of moving with Craig from Canada to California to Cancun while being pregnant?
Well, I think we both knew that we wanted to have the baby in Mexico. And so Cancun was always the final destination. So California was a bit stressful because I think things just come up, right? Like sometimes you don't feel well and you don't know if it's normal, if it's part of your trimester or if it's totally something different. So I think the hardest part was just bouncing around and finding random doctors in the States and not having that relationship. But I managed, you know, there was a few good walk-ins that I was able to go to and connect with some doctors there that were helpful. And I think as far as overall traveling while you're pregnant to hot places was also a challenge in itself because you get very swollen. You get very swollen. And towards second, third trimester, I'm trying to think of how many weeks you would be at, 25 weeks to about 36 weeks, you really start to grow. So I think traveling with a suitcase, traveling with a suitcase and having only so many clothes that fit you today, they might not fit you in a couple of weeks. And then that was challenging, but of course, you know, you adapt and you don't need like 100 different things and you just kind of make do with it. And of course there's stores, so you can always buy a dress or something along the way. But I think just like the constant, not really feeling overly planned and prepared, but just kind of being open and just going with it and just trying to figure out, okay, well, my size large biker shorts don't fit me anymore. So let's figure out where the extra larges are at.
So you did an amazing job of getting back on track, which is what everybody needs more help with. And that's just one thing that you're really, really fantastic with. And I think we actually talked about that on our last podcast about getting back on track. But then there's another C that reminds me of interesting point about being here in Mexico. So you actually got COVID in January here in Mexico. And you overcame it pretty quick because you're such a healthy young lady. But one of the stories that you were making in your Instagram is about the difference in medical care. It's not necessarily medical care, but the medical system down here is you're able to WhatsApp your doctor and they get back to you within 5 or 10 minutes. And so that's been one of the benefits down here for our pediatrician, for all that sort of stuff. But
I was talking to a girlfriend actually yesterday when I had posted that about in my story, and she was saying that she's from Russia, and she was saying that Canada and the US are two of the countries that don't do that. Like, it's actually very common in a lot of other countries to have your doctor's personal information and to be able to contact them like that. I was like, that's brilliant.
I mean, it blows my mind when my doctor would not email me things in Canada. Anyways, so we get down here, and the whole time, you know, back in Canada, we had this plan for a home birth. And when you came down here, ideally, we had this beautiful home with this in this jungle setting, and we were going to have this home birth. And everything's going great until it didn't go great. So tell us about how you dealt with that setback.
Yeah. So like Craig said, I really had my mind set on a home birth, zero interventions. I always told myself, you know, there's so many women that have had natural births. Why can't I do that? And our bodies are meant to do this. And
your body is meant to have that 7-minute home birth that we saw in that one movie, The Business of Being Born.
Yeah.
It's like this 2005 movie with Ricky Lake in it. There's a documentary, and we watched this one woman have a home birth in a pool, and it looked like
she didn't even like flinch.
Nah, it's like the easiest thing in the world, which was not how things ended up for Michelle, as we'll get to in a moment. But that was the ideal. That was the dream, right?
Yeah, that was the dream. And so I think, basically realized that that wasn't a possibility because there are so many midwives here who do home births. Like, it's a midwife thing usually. And not a lot of them actually speak English that I connected with. So there was a bit of a language barrier. And I figured, you know, one of the most important things in that situation is that I can communicate with the person in charge. And so I had to let go of the idea of having the home birth. And I know that we're going to have more kids. And so I think knowing that in the back of my head that, okay, well, maybe I'll just kind of like use this as like a test run, you know, this is going to be like our test run. And then maybe for our second baby, I can try a home birth if that's something still that I want to explore. So that's kind of the mindset that I had around it. And then also knowing that it was important for me to be able to communicate with the person. So I didn't want just anyone just coming to the house, and I needed some guidance. I need some coaching in that department because I didn't know what I was doing. So about 45 minutes from where we live is another area, and they had a birth center. So if you're not familiar with birth centers, I would like to kind of describe it as like a middle ground between your house and the hospital. It's like that. It's actually somebody else's house that we went to, that they had converted into a birth center. And so I don't know if all birth centers are like that, but it's similar. It's like a gentler kind of approach to birthing.
Yeah. Because
explain it like that?
Yeah, because we did check out one hospital, and you didn't like it because there was no windows in the birthing room. They had a nice tub, and they had a whole bunch of things for the water birth and what a lot of people are using for natural births these days. But it was still a sterile hospital, and you had to walk through other departments to get to it. And I remember when we were being shown it, I was like, oh man, it was right down the road. It was like 5 minutes from our house. I'm like, I really want this to be great, so it'd be convenient. And as soon as I saw it, I went, there's no way that Michelle is going to accept this, because, you know, and I don't blame you. You wanted the best situation for, in your mind for the birth. So we decided not to use that original hospital. And then the birth center is exactly how you described it. It's this gentle place where it's not a hospital, but it's run by a doctor. Obviously everybody there is super professional. We had at your birth, you had a midwife, a doula, and a doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we had...
And the OBGYN was like on call, like right there.
Yeah. So everything, you know, there's more than, you know, triple safety. And so we were very comfortable with that. But at the same time, it was just a relaxing place. And again, as Michelle said, it was a home that was turned into a medical center. So it was casual in that way. So we go there. It was 45 minutes away in Playa del Carmen. Let's go back to like the day before we went there. It was a Tuesday and it was a week before. So you were due on March 8th. And I think you had your first labor pain on the first.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the first.
Okay. So you find that out. We're 45 minutes away. Walk us through what was going through your mind and then what happened next.
Yeah. So I started going into labor on that evening. My mom had just left a few hours before that.
And yeah, she was visiting from Canada.
Yeah, it was about 6 o'clock. And I just started getting these labor contractions. So it kind of just felt like pains in my stomach.
I loved how when you, before, like in the weeks going up, you're like, when will you know if they're an actual contraction?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, you'll know. Were they right? Like when you had one, were you like, oh, this is...
I think at the beginning, I was still questioning if it was still real, because as you get into more active labor, which you experienced towards the end.
Which I watched. I did not experience it.
Well, you experienced me in the pain, huh. Which I also love, like the hypnobirthing language of like pressure.
Yeah. So Michelle listened to these hypnobirthing books and they're like, yeah, just pretend it's pressure.
It was all about the language that they used, like trying to avoid the pain word. I'm like, yo, this is pain. There's no other way to describe it besides this is freaking painful.
Yeah. So hypnobirthing, nice try.
Yeah. Anyway, nice concept. I'm into it though.
Yeah.
Anyways, so reality. I started feeling these contractions, like this sensation in my lower back and in my stomach. And I messaged my midwife and I kind of said, I think this is happening. I'm not really entirely sure. And she said, okay. And then you start timing it. And then once the contractions start getting closer together, that's a good indication that you're going closer and closer into I guess you're dilating more, which then you can get into the pushing once you hit 10 centimeters.
Yeah. We were a long way from that. So we went to bed that night.
Yeah. I was laying in bed, but I was waking up about every 20 minutes throughout the night.
Okay.
Some of them were worse than others, but you were sleeping through a lot of it, which I wasn't sorry. Screaming or anything. So no, there's no need to say sorry. It wasn't terrible at that point.
No. So then the next day we drove to Playa del Carmen, which is 45 minutes south of Cancun.
Yeah.
I'm sure most people listening have been there or thought about going. And, you know, you drive past all the resorts and we got an Airbnb. And we had lunch in Playa del Carmen and you were relatively comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was just I knew it was coming close. So there was a lot of anticipation. Mm-hmm. I would say like, okay, well, this is how I feel right now. Is it going to get worse? Cause like, this is kind of manageable, but like not the greatest. And so, yeah, I think just in my head, I was like, okay, well, I should eat something. So we had Mexican food on Fifth Ave.
And then at lunchtime.
And then we went down and then we had a doctor's appointment, well, midwife appointment at 6 o'clock that night that was already scheduled from before anyways. So went to that, checked out how far along I was, and I was at about 2 centimeters dilated. So you needed to make it to that 10 in order to like start really getting things moving. And she basically said, just go back home, relax. Like it's probably going to happen tomorrow. So I need you to conserve your energy as much as you can. And basically see you in the morning. And so we went back home.
Made the mistake of going for a walk, looking for some snacks.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what you ate. I think I had a bag of chips.
I didn't eat anything. I think I had a couple of dates and a banana, which seemed to be my
snacks all night. And then they came on.
Yeah, then they really started rolling in fast and I didn't want to eat, but I knew I should eat. And it was just kind of like, I was too tired. So it was like this conflicting, like all these different things going on.
Yeah. And I was using the nacho chips to make an Instagram reel. So I was in the filming videos.
Last video before the child.
Yeah. And then, so we tried to go to sleep and you were like, no.
Oh, like then I would say comparing the night from before, it was like 3 times more painful.
Okay.
So then I was like having a conversation with the midwife, and she's just like, well, I said, I think it's happening now. And she said, okay, well, I want you to have a shower, because actually I was having horrible back pain. And I didn't think that it was going to be in the back. I thought it was more going to be feel like serious cramps, like in the stomach, lower stomach kind of pains, but it was my back, my lower back just felt like someone was stabbing me. Hmm. So she said to have a shower and let the hot water run on the your back. So I did, which gave some relief, but it wasn't stopping.
It's like the hypnobirthing pressure thing. Like a shower can only give your inside so much relief, right?
Yeah, it's like taking a quart of a Tylenol when you have like a pounding headache. You're like, nah, well, I kind of did something, but not the greatest. So yeah, then we made our way over. Everyone came 11:30 at night to the birth center, and then
I fell asleep.
I told you to sleep.
I fell asleep for 2 hours.
Fell asleep, I think it was like maybe closer to two or three in the morning.
So I slept from like 2 to 4.
Nah, you were on and off. There's no way that you could have slept through those screams, let me tell you. Eyes, maybe.
so they filled up the pool, you know, and you spent a little bit of time in the pool, and you didn't have your magic birth in the pool.
Yeah, no, I don't know what happened, but
I mean, you had a shower, you were in the pool, you tried everything, and nothing was really happening.
Nothing was happening, and everything was just feeling worse, and everything, there was more anxiety too, because it was getting later. There was no clocks around. Obviously I didn't have my phone in my hand or anything, but I had no idea what time it was, but I knew that.
I was playing Duolingo on your phone.
Oh my gosh. Right? That was probably the highlight of my birth. Craig's obsessed with Duolingo, which is
I'm obsessed with the streak.
Learning how to speak another language.
Habla Español.
Yeah. So he's learning how to speak Spanish, which I am too, but he's more committed to the app than I am. And was on 110 days straight, and they give you, it's like a video game, so they give you these like fake trophies and stuff like that, and he was playing because he didn't want to lose his streak while I was possibly screaming in the worst pain.
I was doing it in between, you know, because here's the thing. So ladies and gentlemen, if you've never experienced labor before, it's like such an extreme, like it's one person for 2 minutes going through the labor pains. And then all of a sudden it's like you're back to normal and laughing and giggling. And then all of a sudden labor pain comes again and you're in shocking pain. And then you were back to normal. And it was just like, you just went from one extreme to the other for like 24 hours straight.
I know. It's so weird. It's so weird. Cause it's like, you're sober and then you're wasted. Like it's kind of like you just go between these two different people.
Yeah, because it's just like, I was just like, oh my God, I feel so bad for her, so bad for her. And the next thing you know, she's joking with me when the labor pains subside. So that goes on. And again, they tried the shower again to help you with your pain. They had you in the
had you in the
bathtub, trying different positions. But for some reason, there was just no progress. Like it was so sad to me, because you were going through all of this pain. And every time the midwife would check your progress, there was almost literally no progress. And so that continued on till about 6:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah, because we ended up moving at 8.
8 in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was probably like 6:30. I finally said to her, okay, what's our plan? Because
this is 6:30 Thursday morning after she had had her first labor pain on Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Yeah. And she was kind of like, they were just like kind of open, just letting me like continue on. And I was thinking to myself, well, looking at my stomach, I would have imagined like my stomach, like I would have seen like maybe like a shift, like, okay, going an inch lower, an inch lower, an inch lower, like as the night went on. And nothing seemed to be moving. Like, in fact, the baby kind of seemed to be like to the side and like almost higher at some points, it kind of looked like. Mm. And so I think maybe that was getting in my head too. I was like, why is the baby not coming out? Like, she doesn't want to like meet me, or, you know, and I started kind of getting sad. Like maybe she doesn't like me already, or I don't know. It's just, you get kind of delusional at that point.
Yeah. Cause you had been up for 36 hours or 48 hours or whatever it was.
Well, so. And I thought I had like brain drained to myself, like, you know, I can do this, kind of what I had mentioned at the beginning. Like, there's people have babies every day. Like, I'm not some unique person that's like having a baby. It's like, that's how it rolls.
Yeah. So that was the situation. You, you then decided, like, let's move this to the hospital.
Yeah. So I, because there was nothing happening, I had zero energy. I had like pasties in my mouth. Like I was drinking a lot of alcohol and like zero water the night before, you know, like when you wake up,
it was like, so just to be clear, she was not drinking. It was like she had drank a lot of alcohol. And, you know, if anybody here is drinking a lot of alcohol, you know, you wake up in the morning with that dry mouth.
Yeah. You're just like super dehydrated and like, bleh. And so even eating dates throughout the night, it was like burning my throat. Anyways, I decided to ask for some solutions as to what was the next step, because things were not moving. And she basically said to me, like, we can go to the hospital and they can offer you an epidural. And well, I wasn't really into this idea if you would have asked me a week ago, but I can tell you I was super into this idea now, because I knew that I needed some assistance and it would still be a natural birth, because when you get an epidural, and my issue was not dilating to 10, being at 2, now I was at about 6. I knew that that would help me. And also I was able to rest a little bit too. So we went to the hospital. I was given the epidural and basically given like a 30 to 45 minute nap, because my whole body, I wasn't going through contractions really, or I couldn't feel them at least.
Yeah. So just like a bit of context here. So we went from the birth center in Playa del Carmen to a hospital in Playa del Carmen, about 10 minutes away. It's called Hospital Ixchel. It's a very small hospital. I think they had 10 rooms at the hospital, maybe 15. And you know, it's almost like it was in an office building, and here was this hospital, and they had a birth room, which was really wonderful. It had a very big pool. It had some things that were hanging down from the ceiling that women could grab onto. It had windows. It was bright. The people were very nice. And so you got the epidural, and then we tried to continue on there, but there were some other factors that were fighting against you.
Yeah. So I had the epidural and my water still didn't break. And the doctor came in, the OBGYN came in to meet me, and he said that he was going to manually break my water. So I said, okay, well, I'm frozen from the bottom half anyway, so I shouldn't feel anything. So he broke the water manually and the water broke. And then, so I think what they were hoping is that that would kind of, again, get things moving and things would be, I would be able to get into the pushing stage. And so now the epidural had made me till about 9 centimeters. So it's a centimeter short of the act of pushing. And the epidural only lasted for about an hour. Maybe an hour and a half, I would say. And it starts to wear off. I don't know if it was the amount that they had actually given me or what, but I was starting to feel a little bit of something happening. And so all of a sudden, I don't know if you've ever felt a blister, like a water blister, or just even a blister on your finger or wherever, pop, and the skin underneath is like super raw because it's fresh skin. That's like the feeling that I felt. And now they're wanting me to like push. And so it was like this raw like sensation. And so now I'm still going through my contractions because I haven't made it to the 10 centimeters. And then I'm walking around and I'm doing all the things that they're trying to get me to do.
And I mean, gentlemen, it, like to see this happen was so painful to me. I mean, obviously she was going through the real pain, but I mean, talk about a fighter. You are absolutely such a strong lady. And then they tell us about the sunny side up baby.
Yeah.
Which is why all of this is happening.
Did they tell us about that during it, or was it after when they realized the position?
I'm not 100% sure. I don't remember. But it turns out that our baby was born with its face up. So usually, yeah. I guess babies are born obviously head first, in most cases, and with the back of the head facing towards you. But our baby was face up, which they call a sunny side up baby. 5% of births are that way, but it becomes very, very painful on the low back and very difficult birth. And that's what Michelle had, which led to so many of the problems along the way here.
And just the excruciating back pain, because yeah. I guess the position of a baby face up, her back is going against the back of me. And so I guess
she's a big back of the head too.
Yeah, there's no way that baby would fit up like proper. If she was flipped around, there would have been a little bit more space, I guess. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So push comes to shove.
Is that like 11 in the morning now when you make this decision?
No, it's closer to 1:30.
Oh my gosh.
Closer to 1:30 because she was born at 2:30 and it took them about 15, 20 minutes to set up when I was like, enough.
Yeah. So you said C-section.
So I said, I don't know the exact words that I said, but something along the lines of get this baby out of me.
No.
And so they went and set up, did their thing. And then I was given some more medicine for the epidural, which actually didn't really work at all.
The second one.
Yeah. Because I think they tried to give me 25% because for some
reason. That was in the morning before you decided about the C-section.
That was in the morning.
Yeah.
It was all a blur. It's just a blur. Like if you've gone through it, you probably know what I'm talking about. But when you're in it, it's hard to remember details.
You're looking now at Michelle being in labor from Tuesday at 6 p.m. until Thursday at 2:00 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
That is insane. That is like David Goggins running for 60 hours in a row. Insane. So anyways.
C-section happens.
Yeah. And, you know, the longer it gets, the more I'm worried about the baby being okay and everything. But anyway, so they take Michelle in and they get her all set up. And then I have to wait a little bit until they get the set up. And then I put all the scrubs on and then I go in and they have that tarp, whatever, put up in between. And they're like, hey, you want to watch? And I'm like, no, I don't want to watch. You cut open my wife. Are you insane? I did watch an open heart surgery once and almost fell off the stool. But that's another story for another day.
And you did watch another one of my surgeries on video.
Oh, yeah. I just about passed out on that. So anyways, Michelle and I are there. And these guys, there's the OBGYN. And then there's this other surgeon. I have no idea who he was, where he came from. He did not look like a surgeon. He looked like a skateboarder. And anyways, they're operating. And the one guy is, I think they were playing like his iPhone. And they're playing music through. They're playing classic rock. And when Isabella was taken from the womb, they were playing A Sweet Child of Mine was playing. So I thought it was very appropriate intro to the world for baby Isabella. So then, they did that. They brought her over and she was this little wild animal covered in the wax and all the good stuff. And I got to cut the umbilical cord, which was huge. It was like, if you've ever got the opportunity to cut your child's umbilical cord, they give you these scissors, custom made for it. The umbilical cord would not fit in almost. But anyways, I cut him and this blood squirted all over Michelle. And
I wonder what it means if your child has a big umbilical cord.
I don't know.
Maybe she had a lot of nutrients or something.
Yeah, she definitely had a lot of nutrients. We had good snacks and everything in our life. So
that's why she didn't want to come out.
Yeah.
Because we were at that.
Yeah, it's a nice place in there.
I had a lot of good snacks for her.
So there she was, Isabella. Isabella Star Valentine. Isabella Star Valentine. Originally, she was going to be named L. Isabella Valentine.
Yeah.
But we moved to Mexico where they speak Spanish and L is either the or he. So rather than saddle our daughter with the name the or he, the Isabella, people would be calling her. We decided to remove the word L, E-L-L-E from her name and bump up Isabella to her first name. And we were looking for a nice simple middle name and did you suggest Moon?
Sun? Or? We wanted so I always think names sound good if there are mixed syllables. So Isabella is Isabella. Four syllables. And then if it's four syllables, three syllables mixed with a one syllable name, it just sounds nice. So that's why we liked L Isabella. It just flows. And then Isabella star being one syllable. And I know we were driving and I was saying to you, what are some one syllable names that would sound really cool? And
I had a hairdresser in Toronto. I used to actually have hair down here, and it was curly.
I still need to see a picture of this.
I don't know if I have it. It's from like 2004 or something. And so
digital camera.
Anyways, I need to get my hair cut, and I went to like a real place to get my hair cut because I wanted to see if they could style it. And the girl who cut my hair, her name was Lanny Star. She had changed her name, and I was like, well, I once had this hairdresser named Lanny Star. That's Star is a single. So a single syllable. And so Michelle liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Isabella Star Valentine. We've saddled her with great expectations to be a star. Mm-hmm. But so
she'll always be a star.
So far she is. And she's absolutely wonderful. So we got the baby and we got the benefit of spending 2 days in the private hospital where we had her, which in hindsight, given the option of either having that natural child birth and then being given a baby and told to go home and not have any support for 2 days. I actually kind of like the fact that we had somebody checking on us every few hours in the hospital as first-time parents. We needed a little bit of help. And so we spent a couple of days there. And it was just over $2,000 for the C-section and the 2 nights in the hospital. And they had good food for Michelle. So
the food was delicious.
Yeah,
so, I was shocked. So like green juices and like quesadillas and fajitas and like all the good stuff.
So it was like 30 times cheaper than America. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And a tiny little hospital and the people were really nice and checking on you all the time. So, so then we went home and now it's been really good. And I think that actually we'll stop here because we can talk about, how we're dealing with the quote unquote fourth trimester of colicky babies and how sleep patterns and the help that we've sought out and all the things and the surgery that she got in the first week of her life, which we'll tell you about next time. So we've got lots and lots of stories and lessons to share with you from being new parents. And, one thing that I was worried about, I'm watching this labor go on and on and on, and it's so painful. And I was like, oh, this is the only child we're going to get because I can't imagine her wanting to do this again. And, as soon as we had her, you were like, honestly, I don't think you said, let's do it again, but you were already talking about the next one and you weren't ruling it out.
No, I've done hard things before, and not to say that this isn't hard, but I've had lots of surgeries in the past, and you get better from it. It sucks for the first little while, but you get better. And I think the reward at the end of this surgery is way better than any of the other surgeries I've had. So
of course. Yeah. So it's been wonderful. We are just on top of the world with this little child. So we're super excited. You're going to see lots from her. She's going to teach us lots of lessons and we'll pass them on to you. But I think one of the things that I always knew about Michelle and learned even more was just how resourceful that she is. And I think that, not taking the first no for an answer, she never does that. She always looks for the alternatives and she does the research. And it's just, that's so applicable to everybody's life, whether it's business or whether it's your personal life, to never settle like that. Michelle just did not settle and ended up having a pretty good birth experience. Did everything she possibly could. And classic Michelle, no regrets, right?
I've never had a regret in my entire life. Like I've told you before, because I've never taken the simple way out of things. I've always, you can say it in different ways, but I've always taken the hard way. And what I mean by that is whenever I make a decision for anything in my life, I lay everything out on the table. I play every scenario. If I do this, then this and this. And so, and I'm accepting of the choice and I'm confident with the choice that I make. And so I think that if you can approach life like that and to have no regrets and know that, well, these are the things that I did. This is what I was given. And this is where I was confident and thought that this was the best decision. I think that that's good. And that's how I look at things.
That's amazing. And it's wonderful advice. So what I'd love for you to do is I'd love for you to pass on a note of congratulations to Michelle, but also I'd love to hear your birth story, whether it's your own birth story, whether it's your child's birth story, your wife's birth story, or whatever. We just love to hear from it because we've heard so many birth stories and they're all So wildly different, but also
so similar too.
Yeah, so similar, but also wow. Shout out and respect to every single woman that has given birth.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely amazing and super strong. And we'll be back with more lessons. So if you have any questions that we didn't cover, like, hey, what about this part of the birth? Or we'll cover it on the next one too. And all the lessons that we've learned in the few weeks with little Isabella Starr.
And if you've got any questions too, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. If you've got specific questions, if you're considering having a birth in Mexico, anything really.
Yeah, we're happy to answer any questions about Mexico at all.
Yeah. And I'm happy to answer anything about like now, even like 8 weeks out, what it's like as well. And I'm sure we're going to do some more on that as well. So yeah. Reach out to me, Michelle Laura Ballantyne on Instagram.
At Michelle Laura Ballantyne. Michelle with two L's, Ballantyne with two L's. All right.
So, Laura in the middle.
Yeah. All right. And I'm a real Greg Ballantyne on Instagram. But drop your comments below. And we love doing these shows and we hope that you enjoy them too. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.